This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 65 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, our kinky staff talk about our field trip to Frolicon in Atlanta. Here's your host, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. We have a group today, Mr. Beast.
We are surrounded by lovelies in the studio and a lovely hundreds of miles away from us.
Via Skype.
When the studio is the lovely, lovely Lee.
Hi, everybody.
And the ever, ever sexy Anne. And I have to say that because I live with her. She knows where I sleep. And if I want to wake up with all my body parts, I have to be really nice to her.
Hi, Anne.
Hi.
And on Skype, we have Miss Dorothy.
Yes. Hi.
Dorothy is a correspondent on the Kinky Cast. She's just done a couple things so far, but we threw you in the deep end this last week.
It was crazy.
We all went to Frolicon, and so the five of us appeared in Atlanta. We dropped into the Sheraton Gateway in Atlanta for Frolicon, which is an event like no other event I've ever heard of or been to. It is every kind of kink, fetish, lifestyle. What am I missing, Beast?
You have
furries,
all the fetishes, but you also have the gamers. They have a huge segment that we didn't even get to.
It's amazing to think that out of the five of us, none of us even got to that area.
Live entertainment every night, as if the conference itself wasn't entertaining enough.
And then all the parties on all the different floors.
Ann and I was up on the con suite floor. It was quite busy, wasn't it?
It was the 11th floor out of 12.
How many rooms is in a hotel?
390.
And everyone was booked.
With kinky people.
Filled with kinky people.
Naked people.
Some of them, they were stacked in there like cordwood.
Like Dorothy was stacked in a room.
Were you stacked in a room, Dorothy?
I was paired up with people that snored very loud, so.
Oh my.
People had told me leading into Frolicon, don't plan on sleeping that much, but I didn't know that's why they meant that you weren't going to sleep that much, because your roommates will snore.
That's not what they meant, though. They meant that you're going to be partying all the time.
I did a little of that, too.
Did you now?
I did.
What happens in Atlanta stays in Atlanta?
That's right.
Something like that.
Okay.
On tonight's show, we have a lot of interesting things. We have some sound clips that we recorded. We did some interviews. One of the things that happens very first when you get there, you register for the event, and then you move by a desk, which is the Native Guides. So, Beast, tell us how that works.
The Native Guides are... Dorothy, you were a virgin this year, right?
Yes.
This con can be a bit intimidating.
It can be daunting.
And there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things going on, aren't they?
There is, all the time.
And the Native Guides are there to help you find out what's going on and how to find out more of what's going on. They fill a table, rotating volunteers, and they are the friendliest people around. And they are there to help you make your wishes come true. We're here at Kinky Cast with...
Derek Merchant.
Derek, you are a Native Guide.
Yes.
What is a Native Guide?
A Native Guide is your gateway to all the information about Frolicon that you need.
And I see just a table full of paper here.
There's a lot of information to go out, maps, schedules, Chinese food menus, party announcements, everything like that. All here at the Native Guides.
And with you is...
Ms. Minks.
Ms. Minks?
Mm-hmm.
And is this your first Frolicon?
Oh, no. This is my sixth.
So you're usually a veteran.
Yes. Very much so.
Are you always a guide?
I have been for the past 4 years.
Okay. So you know the con
pretty well.
Is this a typical crowd this year?
For a Friday afternoon for more people coming in, yes. But it's pretty busy Thursday through Sunday.
So this is a big event. How many people do we have this year?
I don't know because they don't give those numbers out to us. But this is one of the largest conventions I go to since I don't go to Dragon Con.
So this is a big deal here in Atlanta and in the South.
I don't know because we kind of keep it under covers.
Under covers. I've seen a lot of skin.
Those that need to know, we know.
Ah, is this your first con?
No, this is my fourth.
Your fourth?
Yes.
This is the 10th anniversary, is that right?
Yes.
Great. Well, got papers in front of us, but we actually have a guidebook that's online, right?
Correct, yes.
And that's up to the moment, and it allows people to interact with each other electronically.
Yeah, people can share schedules, but yeah, it's great for any last-minute class changes or room changes or anything like that.
Now, do you get to have any fun?
I have a lot of fun doing this job. I get to see everyone coming into the con. They pretty much have to go by me. I love talking to people. I meet a lot of new people here. Just doing this job itself is part of my fun.
Don't they have cuffs and chain you all to the tables?
Only upon request.
Oh, so that is optional, special treatment.
I have black beads. It's not optional to me.
I have black beads, too. I have no beads. I lost my beads. Oh, my.
Uh-oh, then you're up for anything, aren't you?
Well, I was green anyway. We may need to talk.
The sign-ups for the different contests and events, though, we're the information kind of thing. We also have tables on the upper floor for sign-ups and other information.
Well, we definitely appreciate your all's hard work, and all the attendees, I'm sure, appreciate it.
I hope.
Glad to do it.
Thank you. And Dorothy, you said you were a virgin to Frolicon, right?
Yes, this was my first one.
Did we sacrifice you?
I did not. I traveled in from out of town late Thursday, so I missed it. But I did see a thread floating around for recommendations for next year. And I thought, you know, there were so many people that were coming in from out of town, and there were people that were only coming on Friday and Saturday night as opposed to the whole con. So maybe they should consider doing it more than one night so everybody gets a chance to enjoy it. But I heard it was really fun.
I am sure your story is you were traveling in, and that's the story you're sticking to, right?
That's right.
And you just weren't trying to avoid the embarrassment of the sacrificial.
I heard that people were invited up on stage and that a big spectacle was made. And usually I love to be the center of attention, but I was not ready for that.
And our guides tell us a little bit about some of their favorite virgin stories. Virgins.
Yes, we have those all over the place. We have a code here called the bead code. And
I have my beads and you have your beads.
I have permanent ones that friend made.
Oh.
Mine aren't going to change. Different color beads mean different things that you're into or that you want or things like that. And so you make them, you hang them on your name tag because everybody looks there, or you wear it as a bracelet, and people kind of know how to address you or approach you at one level or another.
Now, virgins, what is your best virgin story?
Oh, gosh. I'm on the spot here. My best virgin story had to have been, it actually, let's do it this year. One of my best friends came out here from Nevada.
Oh, wow.
And went to the Virgin Sacrifice last night, and I got a text that says, I have a vagina on my head. Am I doing Frolicon right? And I responded with an emphatic yes.
Yes, you're doing it right.
Meanwhile, back in the activity area, Lee and I went down to a room because we were intrigued by the name. November Blue was running something called Sex Mythbusting, and I was more than curious to find out what that meant, and I was expecting to see Adam Savage and Jamie Hyneman down there, we didn't see the Hyneman, but we did learn all about Hymens.
Yes, it was quite interesting.
Things, you know, I've been around vaginas for a lot of years, and I learned stuff I didn't know.
I've been around vaginas ever since I was born. There was a lot of things that she said that I was unaware. So it's really interesting. So I'm glad that we were able to go listen.
November Blue is definitely an interesting young lady. She is experienced beyond her years.
She is.
And we'll be coming back with her for a couple of segments in the future. And we have some clips from your myth-busting?
Sex myth-busting.
Most people think this is what you do when you have sex for the first time. Correct? And we're terrified. Rightly so. This is what society tells us that sex is like for the first time for girls, and that there's a lot of bleeding that goes on. I wanted to really pack this with confetti, but I didn't want to piss off the hotel. So imagine that there's red confetti everywhere. But this is what people tell you. This is what's going to happen the first time you have sex. Okay? They tell you that there is a wall, and if any part of it is damaged, then you have clearly had sex before. And if it is together and intact, then you are a pure virgin. That's not true, okay? This is not what a hymen really is. All right. Science is kind of out on exactly what the function of a hymen is. It is a thin membrane that does cover the vaginal opening, not necessarily on the outside, it's just a little bit inside. It tends to be more covered when you are younger, when female assigned people are born, but it tends to open up a little bit over time. Some people, it's never full in this way. In fact, most people, it's not. Hymens in general come in a lot of shapes and sizes. Anybody wants to hold? Can I get some people to come up and hold these for me? I need 1, 2, 3.
And now a word from our friends at Self. You know, we had so much fun at Frolicon, I can't imagine missing another one. Let's not miss June 11th through 14th in Atlanta for Self Southeast Leatherfest.
Join us at Southeast Leatherfest. We're erecting a vision of ponies, puppies, and perverts.
Oh my!
Have cocktails, mingle, and make a date for our on-site dungeon.
Visit sdleatherfest.com. Come to South June 11th through the 14th in Atlanta and erect your vision.
Back to the Frolicon wrap-up show. So we had this fantastic vendor hall that had practically everything you can think of. And, of course, Lee got completely infatuated by the corset vendor there. And they had some outfits that were amazing, some belly dancing outfits and things.
Oh, yeah. They have everything you can think of in all shapes and sizes, from toys to clothes to little figurines that are replicas of yourself. You stand on this platform and they do a 3D thing of you. Of course, it's a little pricey, out of my price range.
It was amazing. The samples that they had on the desk there, they looked just amazingly like the people that were scanned. In full 3D, you have a little statuette. You can get a 6-inch desk piece. It looks like a toy soldier of you, which is pretty weird. But that was pretty cool. And then they had all kinds of electrical accessories. And then there was a comic vendor this year that had all kinds of classic comics for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Leather, you name it. And, of course, the electrical table I always stop at because I have to. I got some very cool things there.
I saw that electric vendor actually at the play party on Friday night.
Yeah.
He actually has a vacuum unit, too. And he had this very lovely boy on the table, slid this vacuum device over this very not-so-rigid penis to start with, turned the vacuum on, and boy, did it become rigid.
Yeah,
and defied the guy to come.
Yeah, is that the one that had the rod in the middle of it?
No.
You had one that had a rod in the middle that goes right in your urethra as your dick inflates. I'm going, okay, that's interesting stuff.
This poor kid had on a Corona ring around his head and a electrified butt plug and the vacuum pump and drew this huge audience in the dungeon and seemed to have quite a good time with himself.
Oh, darn luck.
Wow.
And I picked up some new toys.
Yeah, what'd you get?
Got for a friend of mine, Yuki, some canes, being the sick, twisted girl she is.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. She's the sick and twisted one. Yeah. I got that right.
She can keep pace with me. Mm-hmm. But more interesting, Anne's eyes lit up when we went through the paddles, and they have taken far hoses and making paddles.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They are the ultimate thud, I believe.
They are awesome.
You know, and they're in color.
They were in yellows and greens and blues.
Oh, my.
No polka dots, though. Not yet.
With all this activity in the vendor hall, but when you came out of it, there was a lot of activity right on the outside there. you could string beads together, and they were color-coded. And so you have black for dominant, white for submissive. You had green for up for anything, blue for into boys, pink for into girls, and then they had a shaped bead that was in for polyamory. And so, of course, I had to make one for myself and made one for Lee.
Yes, you did.
And mine's sitting here on the table.
And mine was a rainbow.
Ooh. Yes.
What was yours, so Anne? I don't remember yours.
It's mostly white.
Let's see why the purity that you are.
No, submissive.
And there was one little shaped bead.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm around Polly so much, I think it might rub off on me, but yeah. I'm not sure about that yet.
But Polly was well represented.
Oh, yeah.
In the
it
festival.
Was. When we go on to it, we'll talk quite a bit about Polly later in the show here. One of the other things by the beads was a message board. And we're not talking about a little one that you see at your local supermarket. We're talking about one that is about 40 feet long. This is all wishes that you want fulfilled, either for yourself or for your partner. And it's everything from gangbangs to different sex acts, different kinks, spankings, you name it. It was there. Do you find anything that you found interesting, Beast?
I got lost in the board.
Oh, yeah.
Easy to do.
Now, Dorothy, I saw some things on there, and I've seen your handwriting a couple of times, and I was just curious whether those were your things on the board or not, or do you care to confirm or deny that?
I took it very seriously, being there for KinkyCast and trying to make connections with people that we'd love to feature here on the cast. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm just going to pick the most loud index card that I possibly can and write on there that I'm interested in interviewing anybody that wanted to talk to me, because obviously everybody usually has a story to share about KinkyCast. And I put my telephone number on the card. And about 2 days later, I don't know why it was 2 days later, but about 2 days later, all of these text messages started flowing into my phone. And I kept asking people where they were getting my number from. And they had pictures of my index card on the wishing wall. So you will get a response if you post anything on that wall. Hundreds of people are reading it. And there were ways to affirm people's their wishes, to put little stars on there to let people know that basically you like this wish, like you would on Facebook. And some people just had stars on top of stars on top of stars. It was very different. It reminded me of the quad in college where we used to post things up and rip telephone numbers off, and it was really neat.
Dorothy, let me warn you. I'm getting contacts years after my posting. They don't
You'll
purge,
be changing your phone number.
They don't necessarily purge the board every year. Just to alert you, you'll still get some strange messages.
So, Dorothy, as we were reading the board, a lot of entertainment happened right there in front of the vendor hall. And one of them was the Frolic Comics. And you had talked to a couple people there.
Yes, I came into town on late Thursday night, like I said, and I was very lonesome. So I was kind of just wandering the hotel, and I noticed that there were three young gentlemen down in the lobby that were all wearing red bandanas around their head. And I walked up to them. I said, "Excuse me, are you in a gang?" And they said, "No, we are in a comedy troupe." And they told me a little bit about the improv work that they do and that they were invited to participate in Frolicon this year as part of the entertainment. So right outside of that vendor hall where all of the wishing wall and the beads were located, they called it the Musical Midway because the area hosted musical acts, comedy acts throughout the weekend. And I had this wonderful opportunity to interview Jamie, Nick, and Conrad from the Frolic Comics and get their input on Frolicon this year.
I'm here with Conrad, Nick, and Jamie. They've just finished their set on Frolic Comics here at Frolicon 2010. I have some questions for you guys that I want to ask you. How long have you been doing comedy, Jamie?
You was about 15 a minute ago.
How about you, Conrad?
5 years in July.
Okay. And Nick?
5 years in June.
Oh.
You're lying. You started after me.
No, I didn't. Let's not do this here.
Sims game of the ref. Longest to sim a game of his wife.
Wife.
Right. How you
wife?
Say?
Longest sim game of his wife.
Right. It takes about 10 years to get good, so you can tell. He's got 15 more.
How long have you been doing comedy, Nick?
I have been doing it about 5 years.
About 5 years?
Yeah. I'm not sure which month. I didn't know.
Is this your first Frolicon?
Yes, it actually is.
Okay. How about you, Conrad?
Yeah, this is my first as well.
He's a this many.
It's three.
Oh, you can't see. Yes, I put up a free finger. He's a no camera. He's the only audio.
So for our listeners, where do you usually perform at?
In a Brussels room.
The Brussels room here at Frolicon.
Yes, but not. We can kick it out of there because I think I see too many words people not like, so they send me to hall.
Okay. How about you, Conrad?
Anywhere we can. There's a bunch of open mics around town. There's also a club that just closed down. We're not going to say the name because it's no longer there. And no one really cares about it anymore.
He's just a size splitter.
And we travel around all the time. We're in a band. We're in 2XL,
just
the band.
Just us playing in the background.
Yeah.
Just give us credit. They're not a C because there's no camera. It's just my...
And Nick, where do you usually perform?
A couple places. Jerry Farmer's Side Door, Sweetwater Bar and Grill, Hole in the Wall. Don't go to Hole in the Wall, though. I mean, it's great, but don't go. Urban Grind, Limerick Junction, the former place that we will not mention, the Improv, Laughing Skull Lounge.
Come see us at Uptown Comedy.
Yeah, but if you're looking to get into comedy, go to Uptown Comedy on Comedy Corner on a Sunday night. That's where you.
That's where you find the up-and-comers.
I'm sorry?
That's where you find the up-and-comers.
Yes. Yeah, that's where you find them.
The good
so you find the, yeah.
Is it easier to perform for an audience that you know doesn't have a lot of boundaries?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't really know what audience is going to have a lot of boundaries until you get up there and start your stuff, and you kind of test them, but then after that, it's... I feel like I'm way too serious all of a sudden. Like, I just got really NPR on everybody. I did. I'm ruining the podcast, the comedy podcast for everybody.
Please just start it over.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing comedy for 15 a minute. He's a very funny first time I said. He's a very funny second time.
I started in June before Conrad.
I'm Jamie.
What do you think of the audience, Conrad? Are they a little bit easier to read because they have so few limits?
Here, it was a lot easier to hear the silence. than most places, because most places I'm usually just really excited, and this place I was just nervous because I'm looking forward to exploring new sexual adventures, and as long as they listen to my set first, I don't care what we do after that.
Were you kinky before you came into Frolicon, or?
Oh, no, at all, not at all. I didn't know the definition of kink. I thought it was like print shop. I thought that's Kinko's. So I thought I was going to a Kinko's to perform.
He was trying to change the word from kink to Kinko's. That's just in case anyone didn't get that. He was he used the word kink and then put it to a printing shop named Kinko's. Okay.
Do you write your own material?
Mine, Jamie's, and Conrad's actually. So yeah, I'm pretty busy most of the time.
Yeah, we write all each other's material. We don't tell jokes that we've written. I write all of Jamie's Asian jokes, and I write all of Nick's fat jokes. And I don't ever perform, actually. I didn't ever perform.
Where do you draw your inspiration from?
The classics. I like to do cover bands of musicians' lyrics. Like, I just like singing Uptown Girl. And I like to steal material from a lot of, like, famous comics. That's my big thing.
Well, I mean, before we even go further, I'd just like to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for this. It was a great game. Everyone just really did well. The coach really, like, put in the D, you know, right when we needed it. And I just want to, you know.
What? You got to specify putting in the D at Frolicon.
I think I am. The dick. Like, okay. Putting in the dick.
Good.
The coach really put in the dick. Right, Jamie? Jamie's our coach.
I'm going to say put in a defense. I'm going to say I'm going to put in a linebacker. He's a tight end, and Nick could take a total wrong way. And he put a penis in, and I'm like, that don't know to stop a defense. That don't know to stop an offense. We're not going to get a point if you put a penis in a football game because it's not to make sense. In a Steeler, come and knock him down. Knock him down.
That's very true, which is why I thank Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I kissed my two fingers like Sammy Sosa.
You kissed your finger.
They didn't know that.
I did.
Kinko's. That's how you...
Well, we've been talking with Jamie, Conrad, and Nick, who are featured this year at Frolicon 2015 Frolic Comics.
Well, Dorothy, you were quite busy keeping the comedians entertained. Oh, I mean, letting them entertain you. But you also went to the burlesque show on Friday night. How was that?
I did. If you went to Frolicon, you know there was just tons of activities going on at the same time every single day. So you really had to pick and choose really interesting things. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to sit at the burlesque show because I don't know that much about burlesque. Prior to seeing the show, I just had impressions from drag shows that I had been to before, and I didn't know how it would differ from a drag show. So I went down by myself and got myself a seat in the crowd, and it was one of the most amazing experiences that I've ever had at watching adult entertainment such as that. I had relayed to Miss Effie of Miss Effie's Burlesque Show that I don't have a bisexual bone in my body, and yet most of these full-figured women were so beautiful, and they were the striptease that they were doing was such an art, and I wanted to pull Miss Effie aside and let her know how much I appreciated seeing the show. I'm standing here with Miss Effie of Miss Effie's Burlesque Show. I have to say, having seen the burlesque show for the first time and not really knowing what to expect, it was amazing. I don't find myself often attracted to women, and they were all so beautiful and gorgeous, and I like the way that they dance as if I just bought new clothes and I'm doing it alone in my bedroom, because that's what it reminded me of. A couple questions for you. For our listeners that aren't aware, what is burlesque?
Well, burlesque actually grew out of the old vaudeville tradition, and so it was a way to kind of keep the vaudeville tradition alive but kind of titillate. So it started with jokes. There was a straight man who would tell jokes, and then the bosomy girl would be kind of the helper in the punchline. And then as it got rowdier and raunchier, she started taking her clothes off, and then it became a striptease. But it's kind of an art. There's always a gimmick with a burlesque show. It's not just a pole dance. It's the very first one actually was performed in France, and the gimmick was that there was a flea that she couldn't find, and she had to keep taking off clothes try and find this flea that was biting her. And so there's always a reason that the clothes come off, and that's what makes it burlesque.
Yeah, it really is an art form. It really is the way that the young ladies move on stage and the young gentlemen move on stage. They are incredible. It was so beautiful to watch. I noticed that you did have males and females both in your show. Has it always been that way, or is that something fairly recent?
No, actually, from the very beginning, we've been doing this for about 10 years, and Effie's has always had a policy, an open-door policy. We don't hold auditions. If you want to be a part of the troupe, you just have to show up to meetings and put in the time and effort, and that's all we require. Everything else can be taught. If you've got the desire, everything else can be taught.
So I noticed that each girl had their own dance routine when they were on stage that was coordinated to the music perfectly. How exactly do you train for something like that? How do you rehearse for it? And how long does it take to put a number together?
It depends on the number, and we are a little different than a lot of other troupes. A lot of troupes operate more like drag troupes, where there's a bunch of individual performers, and the producer of the show just picks performers to be in the show. Effie's, everyone actually meets every Sunday to rehearse for 2 hours, and we try and workshop numbers together, so when somebody comes in with an idea, they say, you know, I thought that I could do an astronaut number to, you know, a Michael Jackson song. And so we all go, oh, it would be cool if you did this, and what if your helmet came off and you're really an alien, and what if this happened, and you can take or leave people's suggestions, but you're getting feedback immediately throughout the entire process, so everybody's helping you build your number.
So how exactly do they come up with the concept ideas for the costumes? Because I noticed a lot of the performers were layering their clothing so that the striptease was a little bit, the suspense was a little bit better. Where do they get their costumes from? Do they make them themselves?
Usually you want to have at least 3 layers so that you have time throughout an entire song to always be kind of teasing something, the next layer to come. The costumes are usually either made by the girls themselves, someone else in the troupe, or they're bought and manipulated somehow. We don't really like anything off the rack to go straight onto the stage. You want to make it your own. Plus, you have to make it removable. And sometimes the way you want to move and take off a piece of clothing dictates what that clothing has to look like. And sometimes it's the other way around. You know you want it to look like this, so you got to figure out how you're going to take that off. So it's chicken or egg. It depends on what you feel with the music, whether you got an idea for the costume and that starts the number. Sometimes you got the song and that starts the number. It just depends on the idea.
So what kind of advice would you have for women that see burlesque, that are interested in it, they're attracted to it. What kinds of steps, what kind of background do you prefer them to have when they come in, you know, off the street?
Honestly, with our troupe, you don't need anything but the desire to do it. We have people who have dance training, we have people who have acting training, we have people who have no training, and it's just a desire to do it. You can learn the rest, and I would say, the one thing that I would say to people is burlesque is very, nowadays, is very body positive, very accepting, and a very feminist thing. It's not about the male gaze, it's not about pleasing a certain type of audience, it's about getting up and doing what makes you feel sexy. And when you feel sexy, everybody can see that. It just translates. You don't need to do something for somebody else. You do it for yourself, and it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, it certainly was contagious when the girls were on stage. I just wanted to get up there and dance with them. They were so adorable.
And it's really funny. We get a lot of girls who are shy when they start, and they're like, I'm just going to prop tart. I don't know if I'm ever going to perform. I don't know if I can take my clothes off. And 6 months in, I swear to God, they're in department stores going to try something on, and they're half naked before they even get to the dressing room. Like, you just, when you start doing it, you're just like, body shame. Who cares? Everybody wants to see this. And suddenly, you can't contain yourself. Even if you thought, you would never take it off.
So for our listeners that aren't familiar with Effie's, where can we find you at?
You can find us on effiesclubfollies.com. We have a Facebook page, Effie's Club Follies. We're doing a show on May 30th at the 40 Watt in Athens. That's our hometown. So we perform there at least 3 times a year. Our next big show is going to be a work and play themed show. So that's where we kind of come up with a theme for the show, and then that sparks ideas. And we're actually, this is our 10th year performing. We're named after the old whorehouse in Athens that operated from 1910 to 1970. So we're continuing the raunchy tradition of Athens. And I would suggest everybody come check out the show.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Miss Effie. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful to be on your podcast.
Live entertainment continued on Saturday night. It got a little hot in the house. And Anne's looking at me confused, and she'll come back to her in a minute. I went to the vaudeville show, circus, and I saw a woman lifting a keg of beer with hooks in her eyeball.
Oh boy,
sockets.
Hooks and, in her eyeball sockets.
Yes, yes, hooks in her eyeball sockets, lifting a beer keg. Some more burlesque, and then.
Well,
it got a little too hot in the house,
and I was pretty much wiped out. And sitting in the room on the 11th floor, playing on FetLife, when the
you can't get away from it.
When the fire alarm goes off,
what time is this?
This was about 11 p.m.
Yeah, I think that's a ritual they do every year.
No, I don't think so.
It happened twice when we were there 2 years prior.
Well, that was my first experience because I've been there before and I'd never experienced the fire alarm. But anyway, it made my heart go pitter-patter in a really scary way.
She's on the 11th floor.
And I'm thinking, what do I do? What do I need to take down with me? Put my shoes on. Put my clothes on.
Parachute.
Parachute. Oh, now that would be scary. 11 floors down. Mm-hmm. Would someone catch me?
I'm sure that the chivalrous Mr. Beast would do that.
Well,
I was in the show, the Subterranean Circus. Just been the comic on stage is just in a little skit about thermonuclear war. Right when
that's got to be a laughing.
Right when the alarm started going off, and everybody, is this part of the act? And then we finally decide to go out, and they tell us false alarm, siren still blaring. We go back in, the show takes off again. Anyway, the Subterranean Circus are out of Chattanooga. Well worth your time if you can find them playing somewhere.
You also had another interesting experience with the Christians.
We go from the Subterranean Circus to the Christians.
I go for contrast.
What a segue. That was, the Subterranean Circus was that night, but that morning, yeah, I was having brunch with the black sheep.
And why are they called that?
They're not sure how they fit in their faith. They're Christians. They are very devout and very serious about their faith, but they're equally serious about their BDSM. And they're poly in some cases, and they're swinging in some cases. And we are going to be building a show in the future around this very interesting group of people, I'm sure.
There's a lot of people in BDSM that have contrast with their faith, and they are looking for ways to reconcile it. I think that would be a very interesting topic for a show.
Oh, I agree. We've done the pagan side, but the Christians have some unique situations here. So I think we may have a few little clips from my brunch meeting with them, but be looking for a show in the future.
And it's not sacrilegious to me because there becomes a purity of just who you are when you can let go and become down to that basicness, whether it's during sex or whether it's giving a beating or receiving a beating or doing whatever. You come to this basic thing that you were created as. That's what God made. And that's a beautiful thing. That's friggin' gorgeous. And that we can't help people recognize that and see that, whether they're in the lifestyle or not in the lifestyle. All of the people who struggle with either how they identify coming out as whatever or how they look or the weird shit that they want to do, that we don't as a community say, you were made that way. And when God did that, he said, it's good.
Saturday morning, two doctors and a microphone, which was an interesting name for a show. And I've always found doctors in the kinky world to be interesting. So we went in and talked to Dr. D and Dr. Kinkerbell. Yes, there is a Dr. Kinkerbell. This was a very interesting team. This guy and this lady had seen it all. You couldn't go in and say, hey, have you ever pulled a light bulb out of a vagina? And they'd say, yeah. And that was one of the questions I posed to them, along with a lot of other interesting things. They went down the road of STDs and getting checked and what to watch for and different types of protection. And they opened the floor to the audience. You could ask them anything. And if you're embarrassed, you could write it down and they read it from a draw jar. So we have a clip from that we'll put in right now. And we'll probably turn this into a full show at some point because there's a lot of information here.
Because people will oftentimes say like, oh, I just went and had my annual and I got tested for everything. They don't test you for everything. All they are testing you, if you're lucky, is they're going to test you for HIV, syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia.
Some states and HPV. Ask you about doing the HIV testing, and if you have an uncomfortable enough physician who just doesn't want to ask and just thinks you look like such a nice individual that you don't have HIV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, this sucks, by the way. As someone who treats HIV, there's a state-by-state basis for consenting patients to check them for HIV. In our office, since we're an infectious disease office, we have them sign a waiver at the beginning and say, like, we can check you for HIV. But in hospitals, this isn't always the case. If I'm seeing a patient in our hospital, if I want to just check an HIV test on them, I have to have them sign a consent form. And if they're unconscious, I have to have a family member sign their consent form. So this is, if they're like, why do you suspect this? So on a state-by-state basis, some states have in the informed consent, it's implied that your doctor can check laboratory tests for diseases that he thinks may be at play. Georgia's is not one of these states. And it sucks. So, if the patient's awake, I'd try to isolate them from their family or, not in a, like, he's gay. What? I get the family out of the room. I get the family out of the room and then, you ask these questions. And, that's another important point. If you're coming to your medical appointments with somebody, it's okay to say, like, hey, can you step out for a moment? And I oftentimes will tell the other person in the room, can you step out for a moment? We have personal sort of questions to ask.
The other thing is, if you're getting tested somewhere that your partner is not from and the rates of infection are different where they're from and where you're from, your doc may not test it because the rates are low where they are. And so that's always something I consider, too, because I know I'm about the only person in my clinic who would test for syphilis because, well, I'm kind of sensitized to test for just about every STD.
Yeah, yeah. Specify with your doctors.
We have professionals there. I don't think I had a certified financial planner in the house, but I would have been surprised if he had a session somewhere lurking in there. But I did sit in on a session with Alanda's kinky lawyer.
Oh, now that's got to be interesting.
Attorney Lady Steele. She was witty. She didn't pull any punches. And her panel included a private investigator and several others. And it was a great panel. we'll be bringing Lady Steele. She's already consented to do a podcast with us. So we'll be bringing her to our listeners in the future, maybe several weeks down the way, but be looking for it. And I promise you, this will be a podcast you will want to bookmark for sharing with your friends and those you care about in the future, because she has some great information to keep you safe and out of harm's way.
Good stuff. Meanwhile, Dorothy found the petting zoo.
I did. It was downstairs in the atrium area, and I was really nervous about attending because I had attended a furry class earlier in the day and was sort of given an overview over the way that, you know, if you're dressing like a furry, what kind of attention that you want to receive dressed as a furry. So I was a little nervous because I didn't want to offend anybody or touch anybody the wrong way. And they had these wonderful placards for each one of the animals in the petting zoo that let the participants know what the animal's name was, who their owner was, if it was all right to pet them, where they like to be pet, in toys that they like to play with. So it sort of was like a little cheat sheet on how to interact with the furries and the pets that were in the petting zoo. And I had an opportunity to pull the coordinator of the event aside, Mr. Ace's baby girl, and speak to her a little bit about some of the challenges she faced developing the activity, who the activity was geared towards, and how successful the event was.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, hello from FrolicCon.
Yes, this is FrolicCon 2015, and you have put together a wonderful event that many people enjoy today, a petting zoo for some of the players that like to do pet play or furries also we saw today. Give me a brief definition of what you think that pet play is.
I'm a part of the little community here in Atlanta, and I also attend some of the pony events because I enjoy the ponies. So for me, meeting the pets, it's all about very free play. Very, in my opinion, from what I've seen, it's very free play. It's very animalistic. It's very nonverbal. It's very tactile. And so it's really kind of about letting that little inner animal out and being able to express yourself in a way that is less than human.
And there are some differences between pet play and being a primal, is that right?
From what I know, yes. Pets have a tendency to be, a lot of them seem to be, in my opinion, when I've seen, more domesticated, I would say. Whereas a lot of the primal play that I've heard about or I've seen is very much more, I don't want to use the word feral animals, but more animal driven. But again, you know, I'm not a pet. I am not into pet play. I don't participate in it. But as a part of the little community, we thought that this idea of the petting zoo would be a good idea to bring animals, ponies, together with the littles so that they can interact and so we can have some crossover in our little kinky worlds.
So tell me a little bit about the event that you put together, the petting zoo. You said that you came up with the idea because you're very involved with the littles community. I saw that you guys were filling out some paperwork about all the different personalities of the pets that came to the petting zoo today. Tell me a little bit about your event here.
Well, one of the leaders in our little community actually came up with the idea and came to me because she knew that I go to the pony events, and so I may have a little bit of a tie to some of the people who might enjoy that. And so the idea was to put on a petting zoo, much like you'd see on a farm somewhere, and have all the pets come and sort of mill about in their natural environment and have the littles come in and pet and play and hug. Littles tend to like those sorts of activities with themselves and with animals, and we love kittens and puppies and doggies and just being able to play and interact with them. So we had the area set up and we had placards made up that they could fill out when they came in. If they had a handler, an owner, or someone who was with them, they didn't necessarily have to, because that person could be the person to convey information to them. This is my pet's name. My pet's favorite toy is. My pet likes to eat this. Please don't touch my pet here, because you might get bitten. But please pet her, you know, behind the ear, because she really likes that. So if you have someone with you that is verbal, they can tell you those things very easily. But for those who didn't have anyone with them, and they wanted to stay in that space of being a nonverbal, you know, playing nonverbally, we had these cards made up so that they could fill them out and come into the petting zoo and have them there so that they were protected and they were safe and they would have this information readily available. They could be as nonverbal as they chose.
So we saw a variety of different pets today. What kind of pets did we have in our petting zoo today?
We had a draft horse, a pony. We had a donkey. We had several puppies. We had several kitties. We had a mouse. I believe we had a links of some sort, and I think that was the majority. I was expecting slightly more bunnies, considering the time of year. We had carrots waiting for them, but I don't think that we had any bunnies this year.
So all of the costumes that they were wearing, they all seemed, some of them were very intricate and looked like they were either very costly, they're very detailed. Do you know how one would go about putting together an outfit to become a pet player?
I know some of them are simple, you know, it can be as simple or as elaborate as you choose, whatever your persona appreciates, from little kitten ears that you can buy in the store to, like, the donkey that was here was in a complete furry suit, and there are people in the community that make those outfits. The person in the donkey suit specifically had that costume made, as far as I know, as far as I understand it. The pony made her own. She's been doing that for a while, so she's able to make her own. And so I think the longer that they play, the more they get an idea of what their personality is and how to express that best. And so they're able to either manufacture those things or give a good enough idea about what they want to have them made for them.
So what else is going on here at Frolicon this year that would pertain to people that enjoy pet play or even littles? Can you tell me a little bit about some of the events that we have here?
The littles track I can definitely tell you about. This is the first year that the Atlanta's Littles and the Littles within the community here have been able to get a suite. So we have our own suite at the con this year, and we are hosting all kinds of activities from Daddy 101 class to Age Play 101. We're doing diaper panels. We're doing a sleepover, Saturday morning cartoons. This evening we're having a back-to-school party. So it's back-to-school themed with detentions and punishments, teachers, students. So there are a lot of different activities. And this year we've been able to have the suite. We've been able to do a lot more. So the Littles track at Frolicon is growing exponentially every year.
So for those of our listeners out there that are curious as to how to get involved in the Littles lifestyle or how to get involved as a pet player, what kind of advice do you have for them?
Pet Life is a really good place. There's lots of groups. There's local groups. For the Littles, littlesmunch.com, go to a munch, meet people. As for the pet plays, the pets and things like that, I know that there are groups that are on FET also. I don't happen to know exactly what groups those are. Look, they're there. And if you see one person who you think might have an inkling, follow a link, follow a person, follow a friend, and you'll get to that place eventually and come out and make yourself known.
Are you planning things already for next year?
Yes, actually. We found out, thinking about ways to improve everything, and would love to do the petting zoo again and bring those two aspects of the community together.
Well, I tell you what, I cannot wait to see what you have in store for us next year. This year has been so much fun. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you. Happy Frolicon 2015.
Hi, this is Woody. I just wanted to invite all our friends that are interested in poly, the polyamory lifestyle, and poly families to join us on the new polypodcast.com starting May 1st. Many of the poly-related stories from the KinkyCast will be brought over to the new site, along with regular contributors in our blog and news and legal information that affect the United States on a state-by-state basis. This is the central resource for all things poly, starting May 1st. Join us. And then there was Polly. Lee and I spent a lot of time in Polly. We started in Green-Eyed Monster, which was an interesting course. It was a panel discussion. The Beast and Anne also joined us on that one. The four panelists talked about how they related to envy as it came in. And jealousy and envy are similar, but they're very different. And they talked about the differences. And we'll give you a clip on that.
You have to determine what you're not getting enough of. And if you can't look inward and stare that beast in the face, because I'm sorry, everybody here, you are all a demon inside, just like me. I have horrible parts of me that I don't even want to admit exist until I look in the mirror and I go, okay, it's time to be honest with myself. This is the way it is. And if I acknowledge it, I can work with it. Yes.
The flip side of that is, what do you do when you feel like one person is not getting enough?
Do you feel like you're not giving enough to a partner? Is that what you're saying? Then you go to that partner and say, are we good? We need to talk because I feel like I'm shortchanging you. Is that the case? Yeah. And it may be, it may not be. I've had situations where the lady wanted to see me once every 4 or 5 weeks, once every 2 months, just because that's what her schedule was like. And I knew that going in. And she knew that going in. That's where that communication thing's coming from. You have to go in with an honest, this is what I want and this is what I need. If you know that this person can't commit to seeing you 3 days a week and that's what you have to feel satisfied, don't even drop the bridge, because all you're doing is setting yourself up for failure.
Then we went over to Polly 202, You Have a Bouquet of Lovers, Then What? By Sarah D. Olivia. And that was very informative. It was kind of a multimedia presentation. She really brought up some interesting things of once you're into poly, then what do you do? Because there's a lot of people that are new to poly and diving in, and once they're in it, they have to figure out how to swim. It can quickly drown you otherwise. We have a clip from that.
I have been poly, open, non-monogamous, bisexual, questioning a lot of things for about 20 years. I've lived in many different configurations. Those include living singly, moving in with a partner, moving out, getting divorced. In that divorce, I kept her and got rid of him, which is quite a little trick. And my second husband got my number from my first husband, so that got a little weird. Then I have a third husband. I don't try and number them, actually, but people like to keep track somehow, as if the number of partners that I have somehow means something about how I do poly. And what it means is that I have a comfort level that I live by. And the thing that's important for me, and me alone, is that I have long-term, deep relationships. My current husband's been in my world 24 years. The other one's been in my world for about 17. I have three girlfriends who have been non-cohabitive, which means they don't live with me. I have one child. We did have a cohabitive partner who was Jay's partner, and I tried to date her. That did not go well. She was like, yes, and I'm like, awesome, and she's like, I'm not bi, and I'm like, shit. These things don't add up. And so I learned an awful lot about what I was willing to put up with and deal with and move past.
In staying with the poly theme, we went into investigating NRE, New Relationship Energy, with Billy Holder. This was pretty interesting stuff because as soon as you find a new partner, the one thing that overtakes the finder and the findee is a sense of new relationship energy, which is kind of a mix of brain chemicals, and things just really start to get out of proportion, especially with respect to the other people in the relationship. Let's listen to that for a second.
You mentioned you had to look up what NRE is, so you're pretty new to poly. NRE is new relationship energy. Also, a lot of people call it falling in love. The mono people usually experience it as the falling in love feeling. When you start getting those warm fuzzies and feeling all that great confusing chemical mix up in your brain, that's what we refer to as NRE. It's that exciting time in the relationship when it's brand new, you're starting out on this new journey with a new person. Usually in the monogamous world, that's scary, but it's not difficult as it is in the poly world. And when you're in a poly situation and you have other partners, NRE can affect everybody. It doesn't affect the people who are falling in love to one another. NRE has fallout to other sides of your relationships. It can bring growth. It can bring trauma. It can bring heartache. And so those are some of the things I'd like to talk with you about today.
Billy went on in his next session called Coming Out Poly, and it's how to come out to the different people, whether they're family members, employers, what have you. And Billy is certainly out there because he has pieces on CNN, ABC, NBC, and Australian television. He runs something called the Relationship Equity Foundation. He and his extended family was there and talked very openly about these things.
So you just recently came out to your coworkers. I've been out to my coworkers for a while. A few years ago, the small media outlet called CNN, I don't know if anybody's heard of them, little small local thing called CNN. They hit us up and said, hey, we'd like to do a story on you guys about being poly. And we were like, oh my God, this is it. This is after we did the Atlanta Polyamory Meetup Group, and we had established a nonprofit. We were running the conference, and we were starting to be recognized not only within the community, but now from outside of the community.
Here's CNN. They wrote a 27,000-word opus on our family. She spent a year and a half coming and visiting, hanging out with us, doing questions, doing interviews, follow-ups, until the story finally came out. The editors of her story told her, "Where's the sex? We need more sex. We want more." She's like, "This isn't a sex story. This is a humanistic story." Emanuela Grinberg is her name, and you can find the article on my blog under media coverage. It's a fantastic story that she did on us. And I'm not saying that just because it's us. It's just the way she did the story was really, really well done. I had to go to my boss before that story came out because I'm an honest person. I'm not going to hide things from anybody. And if something's hitting the major media and it's got my name on it, I'm going to go and tell my boss. So I walk in his office. I was like, "Hey, got to tell you this. There's a story in CNN coming out about us, and this is why." He's a very conservative guy. And he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Are you doing anything illegal?" I said, "Technically, yeah. In the state of Georgia, it's illegal." And he said, "Well, are you going to name?" I will not tell them who I work for.
And so all of these Polly things we're going to turn into several long-running shows that you can tune into and learn all about Polly.
I will say that the level of presenter at Frolicon is very high. I sat in on a conference with Frozen Masal.
Yes. Yes.
Incredible presentations, weren't they?
Yes. Awesome.
He had his act together, didn't he?
He did. He was very articulate. He was one of the only presenters that was actually in the room when I walked in, which was a different thing. Most people were setting up last minute. But every ounce of what he had to say was like completely new information for somebody like me.
The one that I sat in on, which I think was different than yours and Anne's, was the Edge Play.
No, that's the one I saw.
You saw the Edge Play?
Yes, Choose Your Own Edge Play Adventure.
And he had clips from TV to discuss a topic and how to pull it off, including scenes from Dexter and various other television shows.
Setting up a kill room.
Yes, and talk about how you can make these fantasies come as close to reality as you dared. He wasn't a bit ashamed to talk about walking that edge. And he was very amazing. And what did you sit in on?
He did a presentation on rape play. The room was packed, so there were a lot of people in there interested in hearing what he had to say. He talked about the different kinds of rape, so it got you to think about if you're going to go down that road and you're interested in a rape scene, what are the dynamics for those people participating? You know, what is your role going to be? What is the raper's role going to be? Is it going to be an anonymous rape, or is it a spousal rape, or gang rape? So he got you to think about all of those different types of dynamics. He also talked about, why would someone want to go down this road? And he engaged the audience, got some audience participation, and had people thinking about, why would they be interested in this?
And if it was like mine and Dorothy's session, boy, was that an eager audience.
It was an eager audience. And his background is he's a medical professional, so he understands how people react to different situations. And understanding that going into a rape scene for someone who has been raped, it's a way of taking back control that you lost during that other time. So that would be one of the reasons why someone might want to go into that particular situation.
So we had everything from littles. Speaking of littles, I saw somebody very close to us in her cheerleading costume to the edgier things such as rape and needle play 101, 202. We just ran the spectrum of classes there in Atlanta.
I want to thank the producers of Frolicon for giving us such amazing access to all the people that were so forthcoming in giving us interviews and allowing us to record sessions. Since we only had three recording devices, we couldn't get all the sessions. There are so many things running simultaneously that we were just working within our limits to capture what we did. But it was an amazing event. There are multiple tracks running simultaneously. And as I said, we didn't even get to the gamer track.
And we have many things that are to come as well. We were able to make some wonderful connections with people so that presenters such as Frozen can come on the show and give our listeners the experience that we three experienced at Frolicon. So those episodes are in the works. If you're interested to hear more about Rape Play, Edge Play, I know I spoke to somebody about Cigar Play too, so I know we made some really great connections. So hopefully we'll have some good material coming to Kinky Cast in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I've got contacts with spankers, with the transgender community who didn't want to go anywhere near tape during their panel but are ready to go for interview. We just had some really great times. Met one guy, been at this for 44 years. And he's going to be coming to us in the near future. I've already got contact back from him.
I know. We also were lucky enough to be part of a ritual, a flesh hook ritual at Frolicon. There was about 100 people in the room taking part, and there was not a dry eye in the house. It is not something that we recorded, nor do I think it was something that needed to be recorded.
It's not appropriate to. The power in the room was just electrifying.
Yes, it was.
This event was called Endorphin Soup. This is done by Elegant and Archer.
Right.
They do this every year.
Yeah.
They choose somebody that has some issue that they want to get rid of or lighten, and they do this through a very concentrated physical pain and endorphin rush. Everybody in the room is contributing to that by saying something to the person as they go by, and they're pulling a little sled that each time it passes a person, they throw a little bag of stones onto it to make it a little heavier, and they fight to pull this along with flesh hooks in them, blindfolded, and it's just so powerful. There's two turning points. The first section is kind of a negative section, and it makes you think about all the things that are wrong. And then the second section is rather neutral, and it gets you to thinking, well, maybe I misthought that. And the third section was very positive, and it converted all this energy and all the emotion that you had dredged up through the first two sections, turned it into this very positive light. The last person there was her partner, who then took her into his arms and held her, and then the weight was off of her. Her burden was lost. Very, very touching event.
Yeah, it was. It makes me emotional just thinking about it still.
That is our recap for Frolicon 2015. This was the 10th anniversary birthday party, and it was one hell of an event. And so we look forward to seeing it next year. Pam, our contact, and all of the Frolicon organizers and producers, our hats off to you. What a wonderful event it was.
So if you didn't make it this year, Easter weekend 2016.
You have been listening to episode 65 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we have Guy Baldwin talk about gay leather in 1965.